But that is what meditation invites you to do, to tolerate the depths of our emotional experiences in a space of equanimity, in a mindful embrace. That is what is so counter to the kind of this hyper emotional woke shit, where it almost seems like the currency is getting as offended and upset and as reckless in your expressions of emotion as possible, which is another reason why it's such a bad fit for meditation communities.
Welcome to the Self-Defined Human Podcast. I'm Michael Corman. This is a podcast about meditation, radical acceptance, music, art, and cancel culture. Well, that's what we're talking about today. My guest today is Blake Shields Abramowitz. He is a meditation and yoga teacher in Los Angeles, as well as an actor. Today, Blake and I will be talking about the dark side of the meditation world. We'll talk about how Blake was canceled. We'll talk about the role of authenticity in meditation, the first 2020 U.S. presidential debate, and many other topics. So let's get started. Hi, Blake.
Hey.
So I wanted to talk about, you know, stuff like meditation and like social media stuff. There's so many things to talk about. I mean, I've been, you know, we've been interacting with each other online for a few months, and you know, you've been posting some really interesting stuff about just about things that are not necessarily popular opinions. Okay. So it's stuff that I've been kind of resonating with, like just like saying things that are on your mind and things that are important to you, and not necessarily the types of things that everyone else is around you is going to agree with.
Right.
I think that's been inspiring to me to watch you do that.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. That's nice to hear, because mostly what I hear is not that. I teach meditation and yoga in LA for many years now. And that is a very progressive group of people, that those enclaves. So it's almost uniformly progressive. And I'm progressive in my mindset too. I've always been on the left politically, pretty much in any question that you can think of, you know, gun control, reproductive rights, you know, I'm pro-choice. I want Trump out of office. I believe in climate change. I think we should, you know, fight it as hard as we can with everything we've got. What else? You know, there's just so many issues where I'm on the left. I always have been. I think we should have a strong social safety net. I voted for Obama and Bernie, and I think Obamacare should stand, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, but there are some things that I started to rethink that were apparently orthodoxies in my community and in the extended community, such as that America is fundamentally a racist country, and that all white people are racists, and all men are sexists, and America is fundamentally a patriarchal tyranny, and things like that. And, you know, I started to learn a little bit more about history and about the history of the West and about the liberal enlightenment. And I just started to be like, no, they're kind of going, you're kind of going off out of reality with those types of things. And, you know, I'm a talkative person. And so I started talking about it. And in my little progressive meditation community, Metta group and other places, and had some friends like Julian Walker, who you know from online, who has been really supportive of me. Now, he's kind of a well-known yoga teacher in LA, if for people who don't know. He's a friend of mine, and he's been really helpful in that way, because he has heterodox views, as we sometimes put it, complex views that aren't really just can't really easily be plugged into one partisan whatever. So he's helped me to kind of develop in this way. But yeah, it's you know, I've definitely paid a price for having a kind of changing and more sophisticated, in my view, worldview. And it's been worth it. You know, I think it's easy to parrot the party line of the people that you're surrounded by. It's a kind of social status that you're affirming by just, you know, if you're, you know, in a liberal community, by just hating on Trump or whatever, it's like, cool, you know, or hating on the white supremacists, whatever, it's like, yeah, you're part of the tribe. It doesn't cost you much. But if you see things differently from the very people who surround you, and then you say something to that effect, that that puts you in a different category. I admire people like that. And so I guess I'm, to the extent that I disagree with the people around me, I'm trying to emulate them. I think there's some courage involved.
Yeah. It's courage. Yeah, that's the thing, right? It's what is the deal with this? Why, you know, people are so, it's like they just want to know, they want to know what team you're on. They want to know what team they're on. They want to know who are the good guys and who are the bad guys. And it's like, that's a game that they're playing that, I mean, look, for me, that's not the game that I like to play. It's like, when you say that you have, you know, you have views that are not, they're not orthodox views. They don't fit into that narrative that they want to hold on to. It's like that's what I love, right? It's like when views are complex. Okay. And nuanced. You know, I don't always, nuanced. Yeah. I don't always love to talk about nuanced views because sometimes that gives me a headache, but I like when people have nuanced views. Yeah. And just the rigidity and it's just a different game. It's a different game. It's not a game about accepting people or about accepting ideas or, you know, look, the society that we have is so, it's diverse, and you can't divide it into two camps, right? I mean, that's kind of a bizarre project, I think.
Yeah, totally. It's like, yeah, I like what you said there. Are you one of the good guys or are you one of the bad guys? Which one are you? That's it. I mean, that's what happens. That's tribalism. That is a very well-worn, old neural circuitry that we all carry in our, hardware. And it comes online under certain circumstances. And it's very binary. It's black and white. It's dissociative in the sense that it dissociates from the complexity, the humanity of another person. You are either in or you're out. And that kind of thinking has served us well as a species evolutionarily. There's a reason why it lives in our brain. It's a survival strategy. It helps to promote the health and survival of our immediate tribe. And so, you know, there's all the evolutionary psychology and the neuroscience that we could go into about that. But there are lots of things from our history as a species that, you know, lots of adaptations that served us in terms of survival that we must now get rid of and disinherit the best we possibly can, because they're absolutely unethical and not helpful for creating a good society now. I mean, the obvious example that comes to mind is rape. Rape is one of three reproduction styles that humans have employed over the, you know, couple hundred thousands of years that we've been around. It works. It helps promote the survival of the species. That doesn't mean it's right. That's just the same as tribalism.
Wait, what are the other two?
So I'm getting this from Brett Weinstein, who's an evolutionary biologist. He said that the other two, so basically there's nesting, which is where, a man and a woman fall in love, you could say, and have this profound urge to nest together. And, that's the oxytocin and the serotonin are working, and they want to connect and bond and stay close. So that's a certain neural circuitry that gets activated there. And that's probably the best one, because the best of the three strategies, because it promotes a situation where the man is going to be there when the children are born and help protect them. And so it fosters, a safer environment for children. And then the second one is where, you know, it's the wham, bam, thank you, ma'am version. it's just two people get together and they have a great time. And then, oops, somebody gets pregnant. But the man is nowhere to be found. He's just, off spreading his seed elsewhere by the time the woman even knows she's pregnant. And, that's maybe less good, but it's also good in terms of, propagation of the species, because if the man can impregnate numerous females, then, all for the better, as far as evolution is concerned. the third one, heartbreakingly, is rape, and it has been for millennia. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that it passes muster with our modern ethical standards, obviously. And we don't, the fact that something's natural doesn't mean it's good. Tribalism's natural. It's not good.
Yeah. I mean, people don't question this stuff. It's just, this is how, they just take it for granted. This is how it is. The things that we do or what we do, they don't realize they have that option of looking at it a different way. You teach meditation. You're an experienced meditator. This is the point of meditation, is to have that kind of freedom to be able to step outside of the narratives that your mind just puts in front of you, and you can make your own decisions about how you want to do things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I said something in the article that you read, at least some of it you read.
I read the whole thing.
And the whole thing? Oh, cool.
Yeah. I want to talk about this.
Just real quick. I was just going to say that I say something in there about conflict resolution and how the thing that happened to me, I sort of got canceled. It broke our hearts as community members to watch our community splinter in that way, because we had a belief, a faith that these skills we were learning could actually work. And then to see everyone in the community behave in that way, it was just like, oh, wow, including the community leader, you know, was like, I guess not, which was sad and disheartening. I still believe in the practices, but I think they just got overpowered by a very potent ideology that seized the reins.
So this article that you sent me that you wrote, it hasn't been published yet, or it's going to be, or like, oh, right. But you're telling a story about how you were a member of this meditation community. You were a teacher in this community, and you made some remarks, some innocent remark, really, about, I mean, a remark, okay, just a commentary on something, and that kind of got blown out of proportion. I mean, this is not a surprising story to me, but it really made me angry to read it, because like that's crazy. I mean, for I don't know what all the implications of that are, like what happened, like if that community is still intact
in any way. Yeah,
just without you though.
Mm-hmm. I was there for, I mean, I was practicing and training under George Haas, who started Metta Group for like 5 years and then started teaching. I think I was teaching for 2.5 years under his supervision and with him, alongside him. Mm. So that felt like a real honor. And yeah, when I left the community, there was definitely some splintering and some painful kind of breakage that happened in the wake of that. But it kept going. It's, you know, I think he's going pretty strong, and he does good work. You know, I'm not here to try to demonize him. He's great. He's a brilliant guy, brilliant. And, does very valuable work in the world. I would hesitate to recommend going there to someone that I cared about, because the woke stuff is so out of control in that community, at least the last time I checked. But, I think he's great. I just think he got this one wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the deal with the woke stuff in these meditation communities? I could sit here and hypothesize as to what it's about. I mean, I don't personally, like, I didn't come from that background. I didn't come from a background. I personally am not very political. I don't care that much about politics. Okay, so I don't have a strong identity there. I spend all my time doing weird things, like, you know, playing the piano and reading books about esoteric things. Okay, I don't exist enough in the world to care too much. So I don't come from that background. I don't really come from my meditation background. I didn't really get really into meditation until I was just driven into it by unseen forces. And so I don't know the culture, and I don't know why this is the way it is, but I see it everywhere. And it's like, it's hard for me to go to meditation groups and be part of these communities, because it seems that they're not interested in meditation. They're doing something else. And even if there is some talk about meditation, there's something else going on there, which is, and I don't quite know why they're related to each other like this. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do, but I'm curious about your experiences. So, I mean, I'll sort of bookmark my thoughts on that, but you just said that you've been going to meditation communities and finding that they're into all this political stuff, and it's been really confusing. Is that recently? Can you say more about that?
Yeah, well, I never went to meditation groups until about two years ago.
You're practicing on your own.
Yeah, I was practicing on my own, and I wanted to get a sense of what was going on out there, how the masses related to meditation, and what, you know, I just wanted to understand that. And so I checked out some of groups locally, and, you know, my way of looking at meditation and my whole practice and everything is about, it's about meditation. Okay. Like it's not about any kind of ideology. It's not about it's really not about community so much. It's about practicing. Okay. And it's a skill. That's how I look at it. Okay. So when I went to these groups, I found people were not necessarily so receptive to talking about it on a technical level, talking about it, like, how do you do the practice? You know, what kind of things come up when you try to practice? They don't talk about that. They talk about other things. And I see this now on social media. They're posting, I mean, just yesterday, there's a local meditation center that was posting this thing, how to identify racial gaslighting. And look, I have my own issues here, okay, and my own personal traumas and dealing with my relationships with people, whatever, why I get upset when I see stuff like this. But so don't think that I'm claiming that my ego is not involved in this, because it certainly is. But at the same time, this is not meditation, okay? How to identify gaslighting? No, see, to me, meditation is about how to gain personal freedom and how to liberate yourself from habit patterns that you don't see. It's not about how do we find out who are the bad guys and how to protect ourselves against them. That's a totally different thing.
Totally. Yeah. No, Yeah, I like the way you think, man. I like the way your mind works. Everything you just said makes sense to me. There's an innocence about the way that you're just sort of this kind of adventurer who went out into the world to find something that related to what you were interested in, which was meditation. And all of the benefits that arise from a steady practice. And then you were like, "What? Wait, what? What's going on here? Why are you guys talking? And why don't you want to talk about meditation?"
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple things going on there. First one is that my experience is that most people who go to meditation centers don't want to meditate. Just because meditation is hard. It's like they like the idea of meditating.
Yeah.
It sounds romantic. It sounds exciting. They'd like to be able to tell people that they are meditators. It's hip. You know, it's trendy. It's, you know, like I say in the article, you can't walk into a Whole Foods without someone bopping you over the head with a mindfulness magazine these days.
That.
But then when you actually go onto your cushion and sit down and try to meditate, you find that it's extremely difficult and scattering and confusing. And it takes a lot of discipline and a lot of time and a lot of energy, just like anything else that's worth doing. And it's probably best approached technically. So learning technical skills to try to figure this thing out and become a better meditator. So it's not as romantic as it sounded at first. You know, it's like, wait a second, I thought I was going to be just like expanding and floating across the cosmos, the energy, the Akashic records, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, this is just a practical skill. And yes, there are some amazing experiences that might be waiting for you down the line, if you're really rigorous about it. But, but people don't like to let go of their romantic notions around meditation. Mm-hmm. And so mostly what I've seen, probably 95% of the people who go to, major meditation centers aren't doing what I would call meditation. You know, if you're practicing 10 minutes here and there a few times a week, it's like, it's a good, you know, it's fine. But it's not, you know, it's not what I'm interested in.
Right.
So, you know, like, you're not hurting anybody. I don't have any problem with it. But, you know, I'm interested in meditation as a transformational practice. Shinzen Young calls it an industrial strength meditation practice. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that's going on there is the woke stuff. So the political movement known by many names, but wokeness is maybe the best one for our purposes. Most mm-hmm. people know what we're talking about. And yeah, it's really out of place, man. I mean, it's really disturbing to see it in Buddhist sanghas, yoga sanghas, because it is so antithetical to
yeah.
the ethical and philosophical underpinnings of what we've been trying to do.
Right. They don't see it that way, though. They see it as being this is what we should do. This is the point, is that we should be woke. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny that the word, right, woke, it's like meditation is about awakening and these people are woke, right? I mean, you'd have to forgive them for thinking that that's the point, is to become woke, right?
Right.
That's how they see it. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. And you know, and in good faith, a lot of people see it that way, just because they're innocent about what's really in the box. Like, the label on the box says racial sensitivity. It says, you know, pushing back against bigotry and white supremacy. It says challenging sexism and homophobia and transphobia wherever it arises in our communities. It says taking our mindfulness practices off the cushion, out of the meditation hall and out into the world where we can actually do some real good, and so on. I don't know that I would disagree with anything that I just said. I don't know very many people who would.
Right.
But the problem is that what's in the box doesn't match the label that's on the box. These ideologies are a Trojan horse. They mask themselves. And once they've embedded themselves in your community, it's too late, and then you find out what they're really about. And that's, as Jordan Peterson would say, that's not good.
Yeah, there's the famous Jordan Peterson impression.
Yeah, there it is.
Wait, just to clarify, this is what got you in trouble, right?
It is one of the things. Yeah, I was on a retreat, a silent meditation retreat, in near Badger, California. And after the retreat, I was chatting with a couple of my buddies, and I was staff on the retreat. I was doing interviews and teaching yoga. You do one-on-one interviews on silent retreat because, just for those of your people who don't know, because people can get really dysregulated, really emotionally off kilter in all of that silence, meditating many hours a day. And so it's helpful for them to have somebody to check in with. So I was doing that, and I was teaching yoga in the mornings. Anyway, so at the end of the retreat, I was chatting with these two buddies of mine, and it turned out we were all three of us reading Jordan Peterson. And so we started talking about that and just kicking around some of the ideas that he talks about, none of which are outside of the mainstream. I mean, I realize that he's controversial, but he's not saying anything particularly crazy. It's all mainstream stuff. And, you know, we're all three of us smart guys, and we were having an interesting conversation, and then and joking around about him too, because he's such a you know, sort of larger than life and hilarious persona. And so at a certain point I did my Jordan Peterson impression, and we were overheard having this conversation by several of these super woke community members. And, you know, if I'm totally honest, I knew they were there. I knew, in fact, I hoped that they would overhear us, because by that stage, I was sick of it. I was sick of feeling like I had to edit and monitor who I am in that community for fear of reprisals. And I just didn't want to, I was over it. I was like, you know what? Yeah, please bring it on. Mm-hmm. That's how I was feeling. And sure enough, the next day, my teacher pulled me aside and said, you know, I've got several complaints about you yesterday. Mm-hmm. And people were not happy. They were very upset. They were very emotionally dysregulated. I had to talk them off the ledge. Mm-hmm. Whatever you guys were talking about did not go over well.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a key moment for me because I was like, you know what? Good to know. But I don't really feel like, I don't feel safe in this community. This is who I am. This is a guy I'm reading. He's a mainstream author. He said, well, they think he's a homophobe and a transphobe mm-hmm. and a racist and a sexist and a Nazi and every other slur. And he said, and so do I. And I said, well, then we couldn't possibly disagree more on that. And that was basically the end of it.
Wow.
I don't think I ever taught for him that meta group again. Uh-huh.
Okay, this is really interesting. So I have this idea. It's just the way that I look at things is like everybody, all people are working to become more awake. It's just happening. Okay. This is just how it is. You can't stop it from happening. That's the direction it's going in. Okay. As you just go through life, you just gain more conscious awareness of things and you wake up more and more and more. If we lived for infinite time, we would all become fully enlightened at some point. It just has to be that way.
Yeah. We have this kind of a built-in call to develop, to become better, to move along these different lines of becoming. But to the extent that some of us get really stuck in one way or another and don't move past our blocks, I think, you know, people can get less and less awake as life goes on. But if all goes well, yeah, we are doing that.
Now, the question is, in my mind, and this is a hard question to formulate, and I don't know how to formulate it, so I'm just going to start rambling about this and see if anything comes of it.
As you do, so well.
that's the skill I'm trying to practice here. Okay, as I do that, hopefully I'll wake up more, we'll see.
Exactly.
There's like two things going on there for you. It's like you're being a meditation teacher and you're doing the thing that a meditation teacher is doing, and you're at the retreat and you're helping people, you're talking to them, you're having these interviews, et cetera. You have your teacher there. Okay. Everything is fine. Great. You as a meditator are sitting there aware of your reactions, you are being mindful, you are aware of your urges, etc. Okay, that's great. And you probably look very well behaved when you're doing that. Okay, sitting there, I imagine, probably not moving too much, probably you're not screaming, you're not, you know, just a good meditator, right? But then at the same time, you also have, there's still you, Blake, the human being, who has your own past and your own, you know, whatever's going on with you, and you have your reactions. And look, see, here's the thing that I'm trying to get at here with, like, I don't want to sit here and say that that is a bad thing, that you would be, you know, it's so easy to look at a meditator and say, well, you're being emotional, you're being reactive. Okay. But it's like, as you gain awareness, you have certain barriers that get eliminated and you see, okay, I have been repressing myself. I have been keeping quiet. I've been avoiding saying what's on my mind and what maybe I need to say, because maybe it's actually important, even if it's against the rules, right? So I find that interesting. And that's I want to know your reaction to that, because it's like, that's something I relate to. I want to know how you see it, and if you see it the same way I do, or if it's clear what I just said, because I was rambling, so I have no idea.
You actually froze for about, I lost about 20 seconds of what you said. So I think I can, just help me make sure that I know what you're saying. You were saying that as a on retreat, I was, sitting there, probably looking well-behaved and just in stillness, not screaming or acting out or anything like that. And then you cut out. And then when I got you back, you were saying, meditators become more aware of their emotional states. So they're engaged in higher levels of intensity. Right. And that's not a bad thing. Implies a richer connection with their emotional life. And so I was probably feeling everything that was going on really deeply. But how do I reconcile that with wanting to be?
Let me just, cause you didn't hear it. Let me just make sure. Like it's that you as a being who is living in the world and is on that path toward greater awakening, it's just happening that you are noticing barriers disappearing. You're noticing, you're seeing those barriers, those things that a year ago maybe wouldn't have seen. And now you're saying, oh, here's a situation where there's something that I need to say here. There's something important that's happening. I've been repressing myself and I've been holding back up to this point. And it's not straightforward in my mind that you should be setting a good example by being quiet and not, you know, and not allowing that life force to express itself. Cause that's a skill you need to practice, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad that you repeated that. Cause that's money. Like that's I beautifully said that. The word that comes to mind for me is authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. To be able to be authentic with the people who matter, the community around us. We want to be able to articulate how we really feel, what we really need, what we really want, what we actually think. Otherwise, we're in some sense robbing the world of our authentic expression. Yeah, there was a demand on me in that community to censor that aspect of myself in these specific domains. It's beautifully said too about meditation. If you practice in a certain way, which I do, over time you become more and more linked to your own emotional centers, maybe even recovering through meditation, maybe with some therapeutic support, old or disavowed parts of yourself that were relegated to unconsciousness long ago, parts of the psyche that were disowned, submerged, can be recovered, at least in part, through meditation. Usually you want to be dealing, you want some kind of coach or guide or therapist in that process. And once that starts to happen, yeah, it's true. You get so much more access to your own needs and preferences. You know, again, who you are and what you want. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful moment in our practice. It's the psychological piece that Dharma can help facilitate. It's very, some people are like that naturally because of the way that they were raised. They're just really honest and authentic and direct. I haven't been. I had to learn how to be more honest and authentic and direct.
Yeah.
But meditation has certainly helped and the environment, the climate that was getting set up at Meta Group, while it said, and sort of the stated intention in the community that George was really passionate about, was cultivating authenticity and the risk of radical honesty. That was a big part of his teaching. The political thing was a wet blanket on top of all of that. And it wasn't just me that was scared. It was a lot of people just scared to speak their minds about current events, because if you departed even in some minute way from the orthodoxy, you could get, you know, especially after they saw what happened to me, you know,
yeah,
it's like, it's like moving backwards. It's like telling everybody around you, no, you can't think certain thoughts. And it's so rigid.
Yeah. Right.
You can't say these things.
Is there a way out of this? It's like you, we all as human beings have certain ideas, certain behaviors that we see from other people that are not going to please us. Okay. It's just going to happen. We all have these lines that where people cross them, buttons that they push that are going to, it's like, is that avoidable in some sense? Could you construct a meditation community where people were able to really be authentic, or anybody could be authentic? Or is it the case that maybe that community is for this type of person? Maybe there's no such thing as a one size fits all radical authenticity place.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that.
I have personal.
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I have personal. Like, I guess this is. There's a lot of personal things here for me, so I'm kind of like trying to figure this out on my own. Like, what? It's my own quest, right? Like, how to live in the world, and so I'm finding it interesting to kind of challenge what you're saying a little bit, just to see. I just want to see how you react to that notion.
Yeah, no, I think that, yeah, right. Because it's something that you're trying to grapple with too. I mean, there are, it does make sense to a certain extent to gather with like-minded people and to want to have that. You know, if I were going to set up a community, it wouldn't make sense to me to bring in people who were, say, trying to silence everybody else in the name of wokeness, right? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't bring that person into the community.
Yeah.
I really wouldn't. I would exclude them. So, you know, it's like, yeah, if you're going to go around badgering people and telling them what it's okay for them to think, then no, you don't belong in this community. That's a deeply held value that I have.
Yeah.
So, okay. There are lines, right? If somebody was a neo-Nazi, or if somebody was really wanting to tell everybody about how we should bring back Jim Crow, you know, or something, mm-hmm. Then I would be like, listen, man, you know, I don't think you belong here.
Not yet.
So the difference to me, it's not that there aren't, it's not that nothing is beyond the pale. And it's not that we shouldn't gather in like-minded groups. We should. The difference to me is the rigidity level.
Yeah.
At Meta Group, the orthodoxy was so narrow that someone like me, who's on the left, like I said at the beginning, by almost any metric, I mean, I'm confused about economics. It's like, I've recently had the misfortune of learning just enough about economics to know that I know fuck all about
that's
economics.
A mistake. And you shouldn't have exactly. even opened that.
Exactly. Just, yeah. Like, I thought I knew stuff before. And I was, it was actually a series of, lecture series by various people that I found on Audible, brilliant professors on in the great courses series. It's amazing. And I was like, oh my God, this shit is complicated. And both sides, all sides have extremely compelling arguments. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's hard to know. But anyway, aside from economics and maybe I'm more hawkish on foreign policy than some people on the left. You know, like I think American military power is an important piece on the chessboard of, you know, on the risk board of, you know, geopolitical situation right now. It's like not that we're perfect, not that we haven't done horrible things, but yes, we need that in place. And so, not the horrible things, but we need American military and political powers in some sense holding the world together, as much as we hate to think about it that way. The Pax Americana. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. What I meant to say was the narrowness, the rigidity of the orthodoxy there was such that if I said something like what I just said, which is a mainstream view, it's still center left, right? It's still on the left. It's just a little closer to the center. That's it. You can't depart at all. Like, I would get canceled for saying what I just said in that community. That is a level of kind of narrow-minded, myopic zealotry, really, that, it's his company. He can run it however he wants, you know? Like, they can do whatever they want to do. But I think it's suffocating. It's asphyxiating. It's not healthy.
Yeah. Let's talk about the debate. Okay. That I brought it up at the beginning, and this,
the presidential debate,
Right. Okay. So for anybody who's listening, right, this is the unpresidential debate that happened. It was it two nights ago at this point? This is the first debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. This was so interesting, and I don't know what to say about it. Okay, I'm bringing it up here because this is, there's so much going on. Like, my reaction to it is, it's a Michael Corman reaction. It's weird, and it's me, okay? I don't know. Yeah, it's innocent, right? Like, I don't know. I don't have a team here. I'm not on one side or the other. It's like, I found it interesting to watch it. It's not a normal debate. It wasn't, okay? There were apparently no rules of any kind. It was just kind of, it's like professional wrestling. It was that same vibe. And listen, so I came away from that thinking, you know what? Maybe the normal debate format is not right for 2020. You know, maybe we've moved past that. We're doing something else now. Maybe the reality TV kind of thing is the way we should go, because, you know, it's like, okay, look, I'm going to say this. There are people who are going to, they're going to unfriend me and unfollow me after hearing what I'm going to say next, which is, when I watched Donald Trump's performance, I felt more freedom in my body, okay, than when I watched Biden, who seemed to be a little bit more tied up in knots, a little bit more unsure of himself, okay? Mm-hmm. And without picking a side here in terms of policies or anything, I would rather have more freedom in my body when I'm in a debate, okay? Like, that's the way I would want to go. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying who I'm voting for or anything. Like, I'm not even going to talk about any of that, because that's a separate issue. This is like
analyzing it, like, on the level of performance, of energy, of vitality,
yeah,
life force.
Yeah, it's like, so, you know, like, look, maybe the truth is, like, we need a combination somehow. We need somebody. I don't know. Again, not making any statements here. Okay, just. This is a possibility that no one's going to talk about. Maybe we need somebody that has the policies of Biden with the energy of Trump. Maybe. I don't know. That's not what I'm hearing on Facebook. What I'm hearing on Facebook is that Biden won the debate, that he behaved in the correct manner. Okay. I don't want to behave like that personally. Okay. That's my opinion. I'm curious to know what your reaction is.
No, I totally hear what you're saying. I mean, Trump is, you know, to be clear, I want him out of office. I think he's dangerous. You know, we could go on and on about all the reasons why, but the guy is totally unruly, discounting of the, you know, dismissive of the rules of the debate, just tromped all over everything. Mm-hmm. But I've always thought, and I've always said that he's got mojo, man. Whatever he's doing, whatever the weird, unholy thing is that he does, he's good at it. I mean, he's yeah. on fire. And I've been worried for a long time about these debates, but because, you know, I thought we should start a campaign to get Joe Biden on Adderall, you know, because at least then, then he would he could maybe keep up with this.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump is, I don't know what he's on, you know, he's like 75 or something now.
Something like that.
And he's just never misses a beat. I mean, it's ugly. It's belligerent. It's hostile and confrontational and in your face and sarcastic and biting and hurtful and just shocking in its lack of ethical, adherence to any ethical standards or norms of personal interaction. But as a show, it's fucking great, you know? It's like the guy's on fire. He's on fire. And that's why people like him, you know? They see the shit that he does, and they're just like, that's my guy, just like you were saying. It's like a WWF experience. It's like my guy is just beating the shit out of the other guy. And mm-hmm. that's my guy, and they cheer, you know? And, you know, I looked on Fox because I want to get the reaction from the other side, and I watched a piece from Hannity, and he said, Trump killed it. Trump won this debate hands down, because he just, you know, he steamrolled right over him. Like, that was a good thing, you know? So, mm-hmm.
yeah.
I mean,
when I watch it, that's it's to me, from the point of view of meditation, that's to me is the, it, look, I've been hearing people say on Facebook that this was a harmful experience to watch it, that it is re-traumatizing,
that it is bad for your nervous system.
That's the woke stuff. This is not, you know, as a meditator, sit down and watch the debate. Okay. Like, notice what it does to your nervous system. Like, that's going to bring you some kind of flexibility.
Totally,
good. Trigger practice. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, actually, Shinzen Young, my meditation teacher, talks about that quite a bit, trigger practice. He even gave the example of, you know, you find something out in the world that's really disturbing to you, and he gave the example of turning on Fox News. You know, turn on the most strident Fox News host you can think of and watch. And as you're watching, track your emotional states in a formal technique. It's going to be extremely fruitful because, you know, how useful is it to be able to tolerate and track with clarity your emotional life, even when you're upset? I mean, if you can do that, then your life's going to be way more interesting and way more fun. Trigger practice. No, but that whiny shit. Oh, I've been re-traumatized. I get off the train at that point. It's like, you know what? If you have that level of trauma, where you watch a, you know, this crazy moment in American history and you feel like shell-shocked and you need to, I don't know what, you know, you need to go to a safe space and cuddle with a teddy bear or something. Fine. Like, I get it. Like, you're, that's a lot of trauma. I don't dismiss it. Mm-hmm. But so you need therapy, you know, you need to do some trauma work. This isn't a political issue. That's a fragile psyche. And so there are things that you can do to address that. And one of them is what they call exposure therapy, you know, is to expose someone carefully over time. And if you're really because a lot of people say stuff like that and they're not actually in a trauma response.
Well, that's the thing. Like, are they like, I don't know what to believe. Like, yeah, you know, maybe I feel a little bit guilty endorsing this kind of trauma. I don't know if that's happening. I just don't know. Cause I don't, the people who are saying that stuff, I doubt it. I doubt it. They're saying it for some other reason.
Yeah. It's some kind of sounds like a you know, super woke, you know, radical left tactic to kind of criticize and continue to demean our system. That's what it sounds like to me. Like, you are hurting us just by running this debate with this evil man. You know, we shouldn't have debates. We should shield the American public from these horrible experiences. They can cause people to, you know, collapse back into their trauma of, you know, their racial history and et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, they're using the language of psychology to score a particular kind of political point.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the language of psychology, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you find, as a meditation teacher, because this is something that happens to me, where it's like you can't talk about meditation without bringing in psychology. Okay, it's just, this is part of it. This is stuff that comes up. This is what you're dealing with. I worry sometimes that I am broadcasting the wrong signals by talking about these things. Okay, by talking about anxiety disorders, by talking about depression, by talking about triggers and traumas and all of that, which is like, this is important stuff that does come up. It is not, to me, it's like the point of all of it is to watch these things arise and watch them pass away without reacting to them. Okay, that's right. The point, to allow it to happen.
Yeah.
That's the point. It's like, I feel the need to keep emphasizing that, because that's seems to be easily lost when you start talking about negative experiences, especially that it seems to be that just the society is saying that the point is to get rid of those experiences.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that to me is, I need to emphasize it again and again and again. Like, even talking about the woke people on Facebook that I have such a big problem with, and you do too. Like, to me, it's like, it's a problem. Okay. I also, sitting here, am noticing the experience of, you know, that story, those images, that the reactions that I have. And there's part of me that's not, that doesn't want to get too involved in it, but just to watch it come and go. I don't have a question here. There was maybe a question at some point, but that's
fine. I like the kind of rolling conversation model for, you know, the, you know, rather than the rigid interview, you know, question answer model. I think it's better. But no, I agree with everything that you're saying. I mean, it's like, such a big part of meditation is, I mean, to me, that's really the money. Like, that's the juice right there. What you just said,
yeah.
I mean, 'cause you can meditate on anything. You can meditate on the sound of the air conditioner or ocean waves, mm-hmm. or you can gaze at a candle flame, or you can track the sensations of your breath and so on and so forth. But, and all good, you know, all interesting. You can listen to the reverberations of the crystal singing bowls at the sound bath, you know, all good. But where the rubber really hits the road is when we turn in and we turn our mindful attention toward our emotional states, toward our thinking process, toward the ways in which those interact with one another and feed into one another. And there's such a profound liberation that can come out of that, because that's where we get really stuck, right? It's like Shinzen Young says, you break your wrist, you can kind of separate yourself from that and kind of meditate on your broken wrist and realize that you are not your broken wrist, and you're kind of okay inside. But if it's your heart that breaks, it's a different story. It's much harder to separate oneself from that experience and be like, well, I have a broken heart, but I'm fine. But that is what meditation invites you to do, to tolerate the depths of our emotional experiences in a space of equanimity, in a mindful embrace, so that we're okay in the midst of all of that. And that's what's so counter to the kind of this hyper emotional woke shit, where it almost seems like the currency is getting as offended and upset and as reckless in your expressions of emotion as possible, which is another reason why it's such a bad fit for meditation communities.
I'm gonna play devil's advocate, because that's one of those expressions they love so much. I didn't realize that until just a couple of months ago that was a trigger phrase. Okay. To me, that's the way that you explore ideas. You play devil's advocate. You know, you try on the opposite and see what happens. Okay.
You said it was a trigger phrase. Somebody woke.
Oh, well. Well, I used it once on Facebook. Yeah, and it got that's what happened. Okay. And also yesterday, this list of phrases, how to identify racial gaslighting. That was one of them.
Okay? Devil's advocate?
Devil's advocate. You cannot say this phrase.
Mm-hmm.
They've got it on their watch list.
That is awful. That is awful. Mm-hmm. Every time I hear a new one, I just want to throw up in my mouth. Mm-hmm. This language policing is thought policing. It's awful. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
I'm gonna start using that phrase more from now on.
Yeah. Good idea. Good idea. Me too.
Deal.
So to play devil's advocate.
Devil's advocate, did you say?
I said it. What are you gonna do about it?
Cancel you.
Their currency is to get as offended as possible. Okay, now coming back to my notion that people are just trying to wake up. Okay, that's okay. Is it not the case that getting offended, maybe that's where they are right now. Like that's the phase of their practice, even if they're not practicing, that's where they are. Like should that free expression be encouraged? Like, are you making it worse by resisting it?
Okay. Yeah. I think that's a good thing to tease apart. Okay, let's say I was working with somebody as a meditation coach. I'm not a therapist yet, but maybe I was working them in a therapeutic way in this, around emotions. And they have a lot of powerful emotions. Maybe they come from a trauma background. They have a lot coming up. Mm-hmm. What I would recommend that they do, maybe they're upset with someone else in the community, is track the emotional states in mindful awareness the best they can, which means allowing them to erupt fully, like mad, I mean, and not pretend that they are any better than they are, and not try to dismiss them or put a pretty bow on them or anything like that. That's called spiritual bypassing. But to allow whatever it is, rage, grief, shame, to just let her rip through the system and try to hold it. That's the mindfulness way. Now, a couple just quick caveats. If it gets too much and you're trying to tolerate so much emotion that it's pushing you into overwhelm, then you're not actually helping anything. And you might just want to take a break by doing some metta practice, something more soothing and kind, or maybe just watching, you know, one of your favorite movies, Back to the Future, whatever. Or maybe calling a friend and just, you know, talking through things, something that'll calm you down. And then you go back to your intense tolerating practice. And the other caveat that I want to make is that I don't mean when you're in a state where you're ginning up more toxic emotion but through thinking, so you're driving emotion with thought, self-generating it, that's, you want to stop doing that as soon as possible, because it's not helping. So that's different from facing emotions that are already arising in the system. The activity of producing more of them through afflictive thinking is something that you want to intercede in right away. Okay, so but let's say that's the case. This student is having really intense emotions. That's what I would do. I would sit with them and be like, okay, can we note and label? Maybe even if we were in an appropriate environment, they could, you know, bang a stick against a tree, or, you know, punch a pillow if they needed to, or whatever. Maybe they would cry. Maybe they would weep. Maybe they would scream. Or maybe they would just sit in silence and try to hold these experiences in stillness. And all of that is great. So yes. And do not have a really strong and firm boundary around acting those feelings out in the world in a way that's going to harm the people around you. Like the girl in the community that I was in, Meta Group, was smearing me outright, lying to people about me for a year, to my friends and other people in the community, other students who trusted me. I mean, outright lies. So that is not, that's not okay. You know, just for an example, because it's, you know, it's depression or on my mind because I just wrote that article. You know, under no circumstances should someone be allowed to behave that way. And for a teacher to tolerate and indulge that kind of conduct is just outrageous, in my opinion. Does that answer your question? It's allowing the interior to be as insane as it is, and then just as insane as it happens to be, and never get confused about what's appropriate out in the world, and always to adhere to an ethic of kindness and truth telling. The best we can. Of course, we're going to mess up sometimes, but that's the aspiration.
The thing that I find challenging personally is knowing, you know, as I become more aware of things that happen inside me, these things become ambiguous, like to be kind, to tell the truth. Like, it's not always clear to me whether something is truthful or not. And
totally.
And when everybody around me is telling me,
everyone around me is telling me that what I'm doing is not kind. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know that, you know, that's your perspective on it. Cause you know, that's a tough one. You know, that is
tough somehow.
That's my practice. Grappling with that toughness.
Well, I don't know everything that you're talking about because I haven't seen everything that you do, but I, you know, I've tuned into your social media and I listened to that one episode of your podcast, which I loved. Mm-hmm. And
thank you.
Why I hate piano teachers.
See, there are some people that would say that that episode was horribly cruel. Okay. They would say that.
Right.
And I can't necessarily disagree with them. I understand. Yeah. I'm saying mean things about other people. Right. But there's, to me, that's, you know, there's part of me that wanted to make that episode. So I don't know what side to take on this.
Yeah. For me, it was absolutely hilarious. I think it was done in a spirit of comedy, and mm-hmm. I give pretty much 100% pass to people who are doing comedy. I mean, you said that the piano teachers are a hate group.
Yeah.
And it, when I heard that, man, I just fell out laughing, and I was with my buddy Bernard, who's a piano teacher. and he says many of similar things about the, uh-huh. you know, music teaching community, you know, the bullshit, everything that gets in the way of just the music. And yeah. I mean, it was so outrageous and so, you know, you were just saying whatever came into your head. I think when it's clear that what someone is doing is comedy, and I think you would have to be out of your tree to listen to that podcast episode and not know that what you were doing was comedy. Mm-hmm. Not that you weren't making real points, you were, but you're doing it laced with this, you know, this comedic, ironic thing that you do. You get a pass. You get to do that stuff. And if people don't get the joke, then they're assholes. You know, they're just confused. They don't understand how discourse works. Comedy, the mm-hmm. whole point of comedy is you get to say anything.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. Okay.
I mean, if somebody went around and was literally saying without a gleam of humor or a sparkle in their eye, that this group of piano teachers is a hate group, then I mean they would be locked up, you know? I mean, it's like
uh-huh. Okay, comedy. But, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you're doing it with nice. A wink, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you know, everything that I've heard from you is on this line, and you know, not that you asked for my endorsement, but you know, just since we're talking about it. You don't seem mean to me. You don't seem mean-spirited. You don't seem like you're trying to hurt anybody. No, you're a bit of a contrarian. Mm-hmm. You like to needle people. And yeah. I like that. I think it makes for an interesting, you know, conversation. You've even done it to me a couple of times, and it's like, you know, I'm okay with it, you know? So, you know... too much agreement spoils a chat. I think Gertrude Stein said that. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're not out there. You're not out there attacking people or trying to shut people down.
It all dissolves. The meaning all dissolves in my head when I think too hard about it. Cause like I see that the thing inside me that wants to needle people and wants to provoke them and everything, you know, that's some part of me. Okay. When I look at other people who are doing things that we would agree are really cruel and really intending to cause harm, when I look at them, I see the same thing. Okay. It's like, it's the same force there. And, you know, maybe I'm expressing it better than they are. Like I'm doing it with comedy, they're doing it with violence. Okay. Mm-hmm. It seems, I don't see that as a huge difference. And that's a little confusing to me. I don't expect to resolve that anytime soon, but it's confusing.
Would you actively try to get one of the teachers in that music community that you were a part of, fired, or would you, you know, attack the reputation of an individual in that community?
No, because it's a lot of it is from meditation. I think the reason people do stuff like that, that they really go out of their way to cause harm like that, is because they hold on to grudges for long periods of time. And so like it has a chance to kind of, a plan has a chance to form, okay? Mm-hmm. For, I don't even know if I want to say that because people do things on the spur of the moment too. But I don't know. No, I wouldn't do that. I don't ever see myself doing those things because I don't stay angry at people for longer than a few seconds. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
So, but that's a difference. That's a major difference. You know, you can criticize somebody. You can even name them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been publicly critical of my old friend and teacher, George, as much as I will say very kind things about him. I'm critical about certain decisions that he made. That's different from lying about him or trying to undermine his livelihood. So there are lines. And another thing is ideas. I think people get really confused about this. It is absolutely okay to be really, really, really mean to an idea. You can shred an idea with no holds barred and no mercy. That is allowed. It's not a violation of an ethic of kindness.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do it in a strident way, but that's fair game. You would never speak about a person the way you would speak about an idea. A horrible idea, like let's say, let's take an uncontroversial idea. You know, black people are the moral inferiors of white people. That's an idea. So we would be utterly ruthless in just eviscerating that idea, right?
Yeah.
So, but we would never attack a human being that way, even if they were espousing a bad idea like that. Because they're a human being, they're complex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's one distinction. And then another one is groups. I think it's fair to criticize an individual. And maybe it's fair to criticize groups sometimes to an extent. As long as you make, I just think we have to be really careful. We have to be careful in criticizing groups. I think it's fair to say, for example, like I'll take another uncontroversial example, just so we don't get into trouble. You're too much trouble. White liberals in the 1950s and early 60s. Fair to criticize that group by saying, well, you may talk a good game and say that you're in favor of equality, but really you're not actually putting your money where your mouth is, and you're kind of part of the problem because you are complicit in a racist system.
Yeah.
And so maybe you could do more to change that. So that could be like a fair blanket criticism of a group. It's maybe a broad generalization, but it kind of works. But if the criticisms get too, too heavy-handed when you're talking about a group, for example, all white people are racist, I think you're crossing the line out of an ethic of kindness or truth.
Okay, now let me play devil's advocate again. Just let's say you're saying white people are racist. Let's say you say it, you're just saying it. Okay. You're saying it. Yeah. As comedy, but let's say no one else is in on the joke except you. You're just saying it. Okay. I have personal examples of times I have done this and yeah, looking at it objectively, it looks like I'm being a real asshole. Yeah. Okay.
But
like you say something outrageous,
just outrageous, just to get rid of the tension, you know, just like explore that yeah, thing. It's not like
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I like that, just to get rid of the tension. I just need to blow off some steam.
just to blow off some steam, I can give examples. Yeah. We've been talking for an hour and 20 minutes or so.
Okay. So yeah, maybe talk for another 5 minutes or so.
Okay. Okay.
I don't have the time coming up on my phone, so I lost track.
It's 12:24 for you.
Okay. Yeah, we can go till 12:30.
Okay. Can we just talk a little bit? Change the subject a little bit here.
Sure. Let me just really briefly comment on the thing that you just said. I think intent matters. Yeah. I think we should try to be responsible with our speech, but if the intent of a given comment is all in good fun and is misunderstood by somebody, then that matters. It's like, okay, well, then you sit down with a person and you say, listen, I didn't actually mean the thing. I was saying it as a joke. I was kidding around. I was blowing off steam. I'm sorry that you heard it that way. Please forgive me. Hopefully the other person can hear you and that's the end of it. But that's not what we get in wokery. Instead we get, well, he said this XYZ period. Therefore he's exiled from the community of the elect or whatever forever. And that's a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a problem. That's crazy. It's crazy.
And comedians should not apologize for their jokes. Okay. So what were you going to change the subject to?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wanted to talk about acting. This is a big topic though. I don't know that we're going to cover it in 4 minutes.
It's okay. We can get together. We can open it up, and then we can start on it again next time.
Yeah, let's have to continue this. There's so many things to talk about with you. Like, I want to talk about acting just for a minute. Like, I'm not an actor. You're an actor. You're an accomplished actor. I really want to know something about how you see it in terms of meditation. Like, for me, I'm not really an actor. Okay. I've read some books on it. I've done it a couple times. I find it fascinating to think about it because it's so much of it. There's so much that I've learned from meditation. Like just looking that deeply into myself and finding parts of myself that I didn't really know were there or wasn't comfortable with them. The videos that I've made has been a chance to explore a lot of that. Like, can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, the videos that you've made are, you're definitely, and you have a charisma, in those videos. It's the spontaneity of the practice that you're doing. You're allowing moment by moment, whatever comes to come, and it works. It's funny and strange and unpredictable. That is similar to a lot of what we try to do. We try to leave ourselves alone and let ourselves be moment by moment. There's this kind of flow of energy rather than a top-down like puppeteer thing where we're trying to manage ourselves or manufacture responses. And with meditation is really useful for actors for several reasons. I mean, one is just concentration. Acting takes concentration. The more present you are, the more interesting you are to watch. And then there's the thing about emotional availability. And because so much of my meditation practice has been around reconnecting, reestablishing a deep relationship with my emotional life, because a lot of it's been dissociated for much of my life because I've come from a trauma background. I've become a much more, I hope, a deeper actor because I have access to more parts of myself. And I credit that largely to meditation, therapy and yoga too, and other modalities. But, my meditation thing is kind of my mainstay. So, really opened up a lot. I get Like, I never used to be able to cry, you know, like I almost cry on cue now and stuff like that. So, yeah, very relevant. I mean, I could go on and on about this. I actually taught a workshop series on this called The Player and the Sage. So yeah, it's something we could get more into.
Yeah, we should get more into that. I'm sure I would have a lot of questions for you, and just this is fascinating.
Oh, well, I'd love to. I'd love to. This was great. We should do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again. This was great to talk to you, Blake.
Yeah, you too, Michael. It's a pleasure, man. Just keep doing what you're doing. Like I said, keep doing whatever the fuck it is that you're doing.
Yeah, that's what you said. That's it. I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, exactly. But you're creating, and that's what matters. You're doing it. It's authentic.
Moment by moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for having the idea to do this and for doing this with me. I love that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Michael. I'll see you soon.
All right.
I'll see you on the funny papers on Facebook.
Yep. That's it. All right. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever else. If you don't like this podcast, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever else. Seriously, I need more attention, and I need some good reading material. Okay, I'll see you next time.